Hello and welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast with Brian Loans.
At the eighth mile, she's leading Bo Butner at the finish line stripe. It's Cameron Caruso for the first time, 6.592.
On this episode, NHRA on Fox analyst Tony Pedregon joins me as we set up the Amalie Oil Gator Nationals.
And there goes Gage Herrera. Vinny, Vidi, Peachy. He came, he saw, he conquered.
It's finally Gators week, and we're ready to kick off 2024 in the Mission Foods Drag Racing Series.
Jack Green's out first by a bunch. They get to the finish line stripe, and it's Jack Green. 391.6 on a whole shot, a 33 line.
This is the NHRA Insider.
Into the night they go, and the wind light comes on for Doug Collada. 367.3, 334 miles an hour.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast. It is Gainesville week, finally. I'm Brian Loans, your host. I'm going to be joined by Tony Pedregon on this show as we set up Gainesville and really take a look at what we should be expecting for the early part of 2024. Now, the first thing you'll notice is my voice is kind of jacked up. Got a little throat thing going on, but it's being repaired as we speak. Got medication. Going to be back up on the horse as good as ever by the time we get to the racetrack and get to the event. So I apologize for the slightly wonked out sound of my voice, but we're going to fight through this together. I got my man Tony coming on the show, and we are going to be A-OK by the time we start talking about race cars on the NHRA on Fox broadcast and on NHRA on TV. We're going to, of course, NHRA.TV. We're going to kick off on Thursday with a sportsman action. The Baby Gators have been going on all weekend, and they continue early to this week. It's actually Monday of the Gator Nationals week as I make this show, and they still haven't finished that race yet. A bunch of weather came through, so they're working on battling their way through and getting those sportsman winners their due, which they hope to complete today. It was a pretty busy weekend in the sport over the last couple of days. We had the big Pro Mod race down in Bradenton went down. 26 Pro Mods on the sheet for the Gator Nationals this year, which is an awesome car count. And we look at the Western races because the Pro Mods will be racing in Phoenix, and there's already 20 of them on the sheet for that race as well. So the Pro Mod class is back in a big way. Very excited about that. I think what we can talk about when we look at least in those respects coming into the Gator Nationals, there's been a lot of racing going on in that realm of drag racing over the winter. So our Pro Mod racers come into the Gator Nationals probably as tuned up as well as anybody else. Many of them are going to continue to test this week before rolling across the state and going to Gainesville to get into the pit spots that they will ultimately be parked in, they hope, until Sunday afternoon into the evening when they collect a Wally. So, you know, the Baby Gators going on. There's been divisional and regional action going on all across the country. Of course, they had a great regional race down at No Problem Raceway 2 weekends ago. And the Cajun Sports Nationals are back this year. That's going to happen the weekend after the Gators. I'm excited to be going to that event as well. So once we kind of kick things off with the Gators, and look, I realize the Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series has been going on for weeks now, but once we have our official opening day, if you will, of the season at Gainesville, it really goes off like a bottle rocket. So excited about all of that. And really excited to dive into some of these storylines we're going to talk about looking at Gainesville. And when I get Tony on, we're just going to work through it class to class, talk about some highlights, talk about some things we're going to concentrate on. And certainly something I want to remind you of as you're listening to this show is that we are going to be live from every event this year with an NHRA Insider Live show. And you're going to be able to watch that streaming on YouTube. You're also going to be able to watch that on NHRA's free streaming channels. So, for the first time ever, we're going to have live content on the likes of Roku, on the likes of Tubi, on the likes of the Samsung app, any of those Plex TV, Sling TV, any of those channels that you subscribe to that have the NHRA 24-hour channel on them and that content. You'll be able to flip on, and you'll be able to watch the NHRA Insider live from the racetrack. That's going to happen Friday morning at this race. Most events going to happen on Saturday because of the call-out and everything we got going on. We thought Friday was better for Gainesville. Also going to be very proud to announce a sponsor for not only this show, but also our Insider Live broadcasts coming on here in the next week or so. Deal was signed, and I'm super pumped up about who's going to be directly supporting the Insider podcast as well as the Insider Live at the racetrack. So a lot of really great stuff happening. A little bit of a teaser here, but along those lines, when we talk about, you know, modern viewing of sports, modern viewing of events, there's often a second screen option, right? People talk about a second screen option. Well, what is that? Well, it means you're watching the event on your primary screen, but you can also flip something else on for another different perspective. Well, that will be coming, and I believe it's going to debut at Gainesville, if not Gainesville and Pomona, but it's coming early this season, that those live 24-hour NHRA channels, or those 24-hour NHRA channels I mentioned, whether we're talking about Roku, whether we're talking about Sling, whether we're talking about Tubi, whether we're talking about Plex, go right down the list, Samsung and all, are going to become, during race weekends, a second screen option for you, which means you'll be able to turn them on and see pit cameras and see some stuff that isn't directly happening on the broadcast, and they will be streamed live. So I feel like that's a really cool kind of advancement we've made. You're going to see a lot of neat stuff in the shows this year. There's been a ton of work done in the off season, and you know, you saw our fresh graphics look last year. Work's continued to hone and refine that. I don't want to give away anything really, but you're going to see new features and some fun new gadgets in our shows that I really think as a viewer you're going to like and are going to bring another neat element to what we do. So, you know, I'm not sure there's a whole lot left to say at this point. We've had a great off season. Some people called it turbulent. I read that somewhere. I don't think it was a turbulent off season. To me, a turbulent off season is one where we got teams that don't know what they're doing next year. We got people floating around that don't have work. We have anything but that. We have racers like Travis Shoemake looking around. And look, this was a decision. Certainly no decision is made out of the blue or out of left field, and I would never say it in that manner, but this was a decision that took all of us by surprise. And I mean by all of us, I mean I think everyone in the sport a little bit by surprise. But Travis Shoemake, who is trying to run six races here in his rookie year of Top Fuel, has effectively hired Gerda June to be his crew chief and Lex June to be his car chief. He will be making his debut in Phoenix, which is of course his home track. His family's from Arizona. His late father, Tripp Shoemake, you know, was such an awesome guy through the course of the driving career he had for decades. And Arizona was always home to them. So he's going to make his debut there. They have good parts from the Scrappers team. I'm going to guess they have some good guidance from the Scrappers team. And John Kernan shot a piece that I recommend you watch on industry social channels that really lays out some pretty logical reasons for this choice, and the fact that they're used to running on a tight budget. They understand you have to treat the parts like they're gold. They know that mistakes are going to lead to unforeseen and unwanted expense. So while it might seem a bit of a crazy choice to a degree, because you look around and go, well, why don't you hire this guy or hire that guy or bring this guy in? These are two people who have proven, certainly over the last several seasons, how they've evolved their program, they can get a card on the racetrack. And I, for one, am interested in a very positive way to see what Lex and Gerda will do with Travis Shoemake as they make their debut in Phoenix. And I'm sure we'll actually talk to them before we get to that race. But that was one of the things that came up this week as kind of a news story that everyone went, oh, okay. All right, I see you over there. But let's get Tony Pedregon on the line, get the show rolling. We're going to roll through Gator Nationals class by class, some expectations we have for the year, the old who's hot, who's not type of thing, and we can actually, I think, start to talk about that at this point, who made perhaps the right decisions, and are their teams being regretful of some of the decisions they might have made. We're going to bring all that up when we come back right here on the NHRA Insider Podcast. Tony Pedregon will join me, and we will get you up to speed and get you hyped up for the Gator Nationals. Don't go anywhere. And we are back in this episode of the NHRA Insider. And for the first time in 2024, my right-hand man, NHRA on Fox analyst Tony Pedregon, joins the Insider. Tony, what's going on?
Morning, Brian. Is it really that time?
It is that time.
Really a few days away from the Gator Nationals?
It is finally here. It seems like it's been I guess it is because we're all used to going back racing in February, but we've moved that start date to March. And I don't know, man. I think it's going to be great. I'm excited. I think all of us are chomping at the bit.
I think it's going to be a big event. You know, it takes a little while to adjust, but, you know, the Combine was here just this past weekend in Indy.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, we'd go to the Winter Nationals. It was hit or miss because of the weather, but there's nothing like the Winter Nationals. And I would always be on a plane with, I remember one year I sat on in an aisle seat, and I had two of the biggest guys sitting next to me. One of them was the center for Ohio State. This I learned after. And just the timing, I'm thinking, why is the combine happening so early? But yeah, it's happening at the same time of the year. It's just that, you know, we've pushed things back and we're going to adjust, and it looks like Gainesville is going to be a good one.
Yeah, and look, there's been, as we know, a million different things that have happened this offseason, whether we talked about the new teams, we've talked about the new drivers, we've talked about a whole bunch of stuff, but I really just want to go kind of class by class as we look at Gainesville and hit the big points and kind of talk about who we expect to perform, who should kind of come from the depths of despair and make problems for people, and that whole deal. And we got to start at Top Fuel, because to me, there are stories in all these classes, but there is no bigger story than what Top Fuel is going to look like and should look like in 2024.
Right, I don't disagree with you. I mean, we'll run down Funny Car and Pro Stock and even Pro Stock Bike, and we'll have a pretty good conversation about what we should expect and who we should expect to be on top. But Top Fuel, that's not the case. It somehow has managed to be really the topic of conversation. And you know, I think it's safe to say that Doug is an animal. I mean, they've converted, they've poked the bear, and I don't see any reason that he and Steve Torrence are not going to battle, but that's no lock for either of them to be 1 and 2 throughout the year. One of the guys, and not because of what he has done in the past, but mostly because I think what his capabilities are, but I think Tony Stewart is going to be one of the big stories this year.
Yeah, no, there's no way around that. And, you know, I think when we talk about his, you know, the expectations on the guy are certainly very high. He gets in the alcohol car and contends for a championship. We all expect him to be kind of in that form. To me, for the generalized fan, 100% agree with you. Tony Stewart kind of is the big story in Top Fuel. What's it going to look like? What's it going to feel like? How is he going to compete? I think for that next level hardcore fan, I mean, I look down at Sean Langdon, I look down at Brittany Force, and I look down really at those three, Brittany Force, Josh Hart, and Sean Langdon. Which of those three, or maybe all of those three, and you know, I got to put Milliken in this group too. Which of these four people should I expect to finish higher in the points this year? Because Milliken qualified number one, almost won the damn race at Bradenton. You know, we've watched.
Yeah, very impressive at the pro event. You know, it's funny because I wrote some notes and I was trying to do it in the order that I thought, okay, these are really the guys that we should expect to see. And the top three is I think, the top two is. But I put Tony Stewart in that top three. Yep. I know a lot of the drivers are going to be gunning for him. And it's not because of the fact that he's Tony Stewart that he's going to be big news. But I think you have to combine that team as a whole. They won two races last year. Leah, you know, battled right down to the end. But I think Tony is going to be better. I think he's already proven that he is going to be good. What he showed us in the injected car, it's not far off from what he's going to do in the Top Fuel car. And you have to really factor in the amount of runs that he has taken in that car over the last several years. And, you know, I think I called it, and maybe it was just a lucky guess, but there's only one reason that a person like Tony Stewart is hot lapping a Top Fuel car over the years. At some point, and maybe however it came about was maybe unexpected.
Sure.
But I think that he fully intended to at some point step into the seat and be prepared. But you know, look, I've got Justin Ashley and Sean Langdon and Clay in the next group, and I started looking at that. And I thought, well, I don't have Brittany Force in there.
Right.
I don't have Mike Salinas in there.
You
know, and Josh and Tony Schumacher. But I think it's going to be interesting to see if Justin Ashley's team can improve. If and not necessarily, I think they lost a little bit of performance when it counted the most.
Sure.
But, you know, for crying out loud, if these guys find some consistency at some point, it might be them in that top two or top three.
Does anybody win 6 races this year? I don't think so. Does any one driver in Top Fuel rack up 6 victories this year?
I think it's doable.
You think so?
Well, I think it's doable from 2 drivers, 2 teams, and that's either Collette or Steve Torrence. And if there's a team that can win 5 to 6, or let's say 5 races going into that countdown, that's going to be one of the cars that are going to be sitting on top at the end.
You know, the one thing, and he knows it, we've talked about it with him on the show and everything, the one thing we've seen out of Steve over the last couple of years, it's been a couple of lapses at the worst possible time. And, you know, as good as the fields have been over the last few years, this one's even better. So it's like that type of thing, that three or four of those, let's call it mental mistakes, and these are mistakes that, you know, for a couple of years he was able to get away with, and the racing luck went his way, and now it doesn't seem to be going that way, and maybe it changes here. But I think the one thing, if Steve is as consistent as he was during the championship run, I'm with you. If Steve is as consistent as he was the last 2 years, I don't necessarily put him as the biggest threat to Doug Coletta.
I agree. Steve Torrence is going to have to turn something around. Whatever it is, and I'm not saying it's anything with the level of intensity or the lifestyle or whatever it is, I don't disagree with you. Steve Torrence is going to have to be more competitive, you know, at the starting line. And, you know, and I thought about it, just, you know, we talk so much about the reaction time, and it's not just the reaction time. I mean, the reflexes, the reaction time are a big part of it when they leave the starting line, but it doesn't end there. I mean, the quick reaction, the quick reflexes, they actually show in the car, but the car control and everything else that Steve Torrence possesses is there. He hasn't lost his touch, but you know, we all know the numbers don't lie. It's on the starting line. And the other thing that I think is going to be just a common thing, I mean, we haven't brought up Antoine Brown.
Right.
He's going to win a race.
Yeah, that's the insane thing. We keep thinking of guys go, oh, wait a second, we haven't talked about him yet. Right, Antoine. Antoine hadn't even entered the chat yet. Yeah.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I mean, it's going to be tough for any single car to win multiple races, let alone when you get up into that 4, 5, 6 race win range. That is going to be very tough. But I think there's two solid teams. It's just amazing. I've been to Coletta's shop. It's been a while. But when you look at these teams and when you look at these cars, there is something that stands out. You know, pretty much all these cars in the top, we talk about the top 12, they're all state of the art.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was at Torrence's shop a couple of weeks ago, and you just look at the personnel and you can see the difference. It's like watching an NFL game or an NBA team. They really have, you know, they got all the talent.
Yeah.
And so does Coletta, and so does Tony Stewart. You know, and then everyone, I think they fall, and that's no disrespect to any of these teams, but, you know, there is no question that there is a reason that these cars are in that top three or top five echelon.
And look, we talk about the Coletta team, obviously some shifts made there in that Brian Houston is now the crew chief for Sean Langdon, and you know, we saw the immediate results of that. At the race in Bradenton, the thing was ripping off mid-60s. It all of a sudden looks, you know, it looks like it should again over there in the DHL car. Max Savage is now the crew chief for Doug Coletta's car. I shouldn't say that. Alan Johnson remains the crew chief. Max Savage is the car chief on the car, assuming the role that Houston had. You know, the one thing I think that both Houston and Sean Langdon have in common, they had great success racing together at Allen Abbey back in the day. But I think Houston, this is his first chance to stand on his own two feet and be the executive decision maker on that car. And damn it, Langdon just wants to win a race again. I mean, the guy's been surly for the last like 3 or 4 seasons. He's salty every time we talk to him, but it's because he knows he hasn't necessarily had a piece of equipment that could stand in the ring with everybody else.
Well, Sean does know that dreams do come true, Sean. And I think you're going to get it. I think you're going to get, you know, I think the shuffling is really, it's a good decision. And I think the fact that they made some changes within that team are only going to make it better. And you and I, we've been talking about this for years. And the Coletta team with the Top Fuel car, they are finally where we fully expected them to be. Championship capable with a championship in their pocket, because that carries a lot of weight. That has a lot of meaning. That answers a lot of questions, not just for us, but that answers a lot of questions for Doug when he goes to the starting line. That answers a lot of questions for that team when Doug gets in that car and they roll him through that burnout box. So, but I think in terms of both cars, well, you know, Langdon's car, it showed some potential, but I think because of the shuffling that they have made, you know, if you think about Brian Houston, he has taken that car testing a lot of times without Alan there. Now, Alan, of course, he's, you know, via satellite, he's been on the phone, You know, he communicates with them, you know, on the computer. So it's the next best thing, but there's no questions about his capabilities, Brian's right. talent, because he's been there, he's done it, and the car has already showed potential. So, you know, there's another car right there that maybe we could have written it off over yeah. the last couple of years. We've just been waiting and waiting, and they're going to show up.
They are going to show up. I think the immediate impact of Nicky Bonifani joining Clay Milliken's team showed itself in Bradenton. I think that obviously the car won three races last year, so there was no critical flaws there. But when you augment the team with a guy that Jim Oberhofer is intimately familiar with, the guys have been friends and have worked together for decades. We saw that car not only fast, but it wasn't eating up parts either. So the Milliken car. A three race winner last year, if it can run to that level, and the races they won were oddball races, right? Chicago was kind of a touch and go situation. Denver was kind of a weird spot, but they managed their way through it. But they qualified number one down there, and they took that number one pretty deep into elimination. So that to me is another team that has taken a kind of a quantum leap forward.
It really seems like Clay and that team with Jim O, and now the addition of Nick Jr. It's funny how you just don't anticipate the chemistry factor, yeah. and just in one outing at the pro event, it seems like there's a different dynamic. I think they're one of the most underestimated teams for this reason. We talk about everyone else. Of course it was Doug and Steve and, Antron and, of course Leah, they were battling it out, and we only seemed to talk about Clay when he got to the semifinals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shot at a couple of guys, but the car's performance, you cannot deny. They do lack a little bit of consistency, but there's one thing about this group is they have taken their lumps.
Yes.
And I think yeah. that has affected them. I think along with that, some drama has come along with it. And, if they're past that, then, Clay Milliken is just, he's yeah. going to be one of the front runners. And I don't think it's going to be a surprise to see him get to the second round, get to the semifinals. The other thing that has happened with that team, besides the performance, is the driver has really stepped up. Not recently, over the last couple of years. Yeah. Clay Milliken brings the heat, and that is something that a driver has to do to be able to compete. And I've said this before, and I even got a little bit of pushback, but like I said earlier, the numbers do not lie. And the competition over the last few years, when Steve was earning and just dominating,
yeah.
you didn't have the competition like you have now. So like what Doug did last year, if you can win a championship with the wolf pack surrounding you, I think it makes it a little sweeter.
All right, out of these three racers, who finishes highest? Brittany, Hart, or Salinas? Which one of those three finishes highest? And are all three of them in the top 10 at the end of the year? I don't think so. I don't think all three of these cars end up in the top 10. I want to know which one you think finishes highest and which one or any do you think all three of them make the top 10?
I'm going to be fair to you. I did think about it, but I'm already done thinking about it. And Brittany Force, I think, is really going to have a turnaround season. They didn't really show it a few weeks ago when they were on the racetrack. But, and I don't know this for a fact, but we're going to see the car's performance. Yeah. We're going to talk to David Grubnick plenty. We're going to see how that dynamic has played out over the offseason. But there's no question. I mean, whatever he put on the shelf with their old combination yeah. – I'm pretty sure. Now, did he take everything back and put it the way it was? Maybe it's going to be a little bit of a hybrid of what he was trying, yeah. but there's beyond a shadow of a doubt, that car is not going to the starting line with what it had last year.
Sure.
And, we'll verify that, we'll confirm it, and if it's as simple as just taking what he had and maybe making some upgrades in terms of parts, there may have been a couple of components that he had been running that the other JFR cars weren't running. But whatever he does, I think we're going to see that car's performance improve. Brittany, the toughest part of that challenge is going to be competing with a Doug yeah. on the starting line, yeah. competing with a Tony Stewart, because I can tell you this, Tony's going to be solid. He's going to be yeah. rock solid. And you got to compete with Josh Hart. and Antron and just all these guys that can get off the starting line that have what it takes. They have the good car control. They do everything right. They have the consistency from the second the car starts to the second it rolls through the starting line. That's what she has to compete with. So, you know, I think it's really going to be the pressure is going to be on her shoulders, but I see a turnaround in terms of performance with that car. And if we can see that car fire shots in qualifying like it did years ago, yeah, or for several years, a couple years ago, then, you know, again, there's just it's going to create a lot of shuffling in top fuel.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one dynamic change is, like, there are now people that can answer some of those shots in qualifying to a degree. Like back in the day when they would throw down a 64 and everybody else was running 68 or 69, it was like mind boggling. Now you got a couple other teams out there that can throw, you know, hit these kind of tape measure home runs as well. So yeah, to your point, agree with all that. You know, let's talk about Josh Hart before we move on to Funny Car. But, you know, Josh Hart to me is the last of those cars that finished well out of where we expect them to end up. They made wholesale investments in the offseason, basically revamped the entire fuel system. He said they were behind on their fuel system technologically. They scrapped everything they had and brought everything up to the spec they needed it to be. We did see some decent runs out of the car, not earth-shattering stuff, but more competitive runs from Bradenton. They did pop it once or twice, but it's like that's the cost of doing business, I guess, when you're going to put a whole new fuel system in the car.
Yeah, and I think there's something brewing with the driver that gives him, you know, look, anyone that is going to build a successful business like Josh Hart has done, there is some competitive nature there. That's not right. A normal guy.
Right.
You know, of course, when we listen to him, it's like, okay, he's pretty reserved. But I think there's something screaming in that body of Josh's that wants out.
Yeah.
And I think if we can see some success, but, you know, to further answer your question, is it going to be, is it going to be Brittany or Mike Salinas or Josh Hart? I mean, really, that puts the onus on Josh Hart and even Mike Salinas.
Yep.
You know, that car right there, we know it can wobble. But, you know, there again, if I'm Mike, I'm getting on the, I'm rekindling that relationship with Jose Gonzalez. If that's where the magic was, but whatever it was, Mike could be more competitive if he can fix things on the starting line. Because I can tell you this, and you know this, and I think our hardcore fans that follow the sport know this, if you have an average that is between 80 and 90,
oh, you're
and
dead.
Occasionally you want to have a three-digit reaction time,
doomed.
That's not what we're looking at here when we're looking at the top 12 in this class. It's not going to be good enough. And Mike Salinas has had that magic at some point,
yep,
and lost it. And it happens. Look, I mean, we've talked about Steve Torrence. The key to success is, you know, we always talk so much about the car. A lot of people might tell you, well, it's 80% the car, because almost anyone can get a race car down the track. But make the difference. Is it no different than can anyone, Al Bundy, not throw a football? Can you or I not get – go to Las Vegas Motor Speedway and get a NASCAR around the track? But here's where the key to success comes into play. Now do it like the elite drivers.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about in Top Fuel. So I think that the onus is on Mike Salinas. See, Josh Hart, it's like the lion from The Wizard of Oz and the Scarecrow. They each have something the other wants. Mike needs better reaction times. Josh Hart needs Mike Salinas' car.
Right.
But he can get it.
Yeah.
You can get it. I just think that those two teams, they have some work to do, one in performance and the other just, you know, whatever's going to make him more competitive to win races again, and that's Mike Salinas.
Yeah, and before we go to Funny Car, just back up one of your points that you made, the argument that it's 80% the car, which there are times you can make that argument. And, you know, there were seasons of Steve Torrence's championship, which he drove the car very well, but the car was head and shoulders better than everybody on the racetrack on a week-to-week basis. And I would say those seasons, yes, it was 80% the car. And that detracts nothing from Steve because he drove the car professionally, but it was so much better than everybody else's car, it was ridiculous. In 2024, that argument to me goes out the window because you're no longer going to have one car that can run low 60s in the best conditions, one car that can run mid-60s in moderate conditions. You now have a pile of those things. And so the 80% the car argument goes out the window if and when you have these tightly grouped fields. And yes, if you're going to go up there and spot people a hundredth and a half or 200th of a second on the spot on the starting line, that is a doomsday math. That's going to get you nowhere. So yeah, I agree with you that 80% the car argument comes up a lot, but I feel like in Top Fuel, especially this year with what we've seen so far, it is going to move way closer to a 50-50 margin, assuming the cars maintain how kind of tight their performance has been in the off season so far. So
it's the low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the obvious. It's right there in front of you. But I'll put it to you this way. This is really the argument. If you have five good cars and you have two drivers that really stand out above the rest,
yep,
and then you have three that maybe the sponsor wants this guy in the car, so maybe there's some politics, and well, you know, this guy's got the money, he wants in that car. Let me break it down this way. Do you want, you have a brand new car that you've just assembled, and you've got a driver, you've got two picks for a driver. You have one that's going to chop down and be in the 40 and 50 range every time he's in a tough race. Or do you think you can fix the car? The car's mechanic. It's just parts. You tell the car what to do. You get the right person telling it what to do, but it's much more difficult to fix a driver.
Yeah.
He's either quick or he's not. He's either good or he's not. So I think that's really where the argument is. And just one last thing before we go to Funny Car, don't sleep on Billy Torrance.
There you go. And yeah, again, it's insane how many names are in this conversation that we keep. I mean, just like throwing, like, it's like throwing life jackets off the side. You take one. So we go to Funny Car, and obviously the Austin Proc story has come out of the gate flying. Not that we necessarily doubted it would, right? Because kid's talented. Statistically, I think you're looking at the best Funny Car over the last couple of years. No, it doesn't have the most championships, but as far as race wins and consistency and average elapsed time, there's really nothing better than that Cornwell Tools Camaro. And Austin did not squander his first shot in that car at all.
No, I think he performed as expected, but you know, Austin's going to be put through the test.
Yeah.
I mean, and look, he's going to be in the top two. I think the biggest battle is going to be between Tasca and Proc, and make no mistake about it, Hagen is going to, he's going to get out of the car and he's going to say, and he might even tell me if he hears that comment, you must have forgot. but Matt really makes up something in a department that, in terms of consistency, and I started to say this in Top Fuel, the name of the game is to be consistent all the time. Yeah. Every day you wake up, when you wake up feeling good, when you wake up feeling not so good, maybe you didn't get good sleep, maybe you did. The key to success is being consistently good, and that is one thing that Matt Hagen does year in, year out. Great car control. When we talk about car control in these Funny Cars, it really seems to rear its head a lot more than any other car in this sport that we see.
Absolutely.
So Matt Hagen is going to be there. And the top three, I mean, I hate to just take Robert out and plug Proc in, because typically you would expect to see something fall off, but that's not going to happen because Austin, he's got minimal time in a Funny Car testing, but he does have some time. But here again, we have another example of a talent that has grown up around the sport. There's a weight factor. It might be as much as 40 or I don't know if it's 50 pounds.
It is.
You've got 50 pounds of weight in a critical area that allows you to kind of, you know, maybe it allows you to get closer to the weight. But, you know, so there's all these little things that are going to put that car, it's not going to skip a beat. And I don't know if I'm going to get to the point where I'm going to say it might be better, because Robert brought a lot of things to the table.
Yes.
And when he gets back in the seat, we're going to see that. But Robert is a very seasoned veteran. So, and I don't say this, I don't say, well, it's going to be tough shoes to fill just because of it being, you know, popular to say or politically correct to say, but that's really a tough thing for Austin Proc.
Yeah.
But you know, the guy's racing with his family. They've already performed. You're working with one of the all-time best crew chiefs in a Nitro Funny car, and for that reason, that car's not going to skip a beat.
No, it isn't. It isn't, and I'm excited to see, you know, some of that attitude, some of that excitement, and listen, it's human nature, and these guys will deny it till the sun goes down, and that's fine. But if Proc comes out in this rookie season in a funny car and racks up, let's say he wins, and this is over the top, but let's say it happens. Let's say he wins three of the first six races. Because we're going to hear it all in Gainesville. We're going to hear oh, man, so great to have him in the class. What a great addition to our class. I love that kid. I used to see him in the pits when he was, you know, whizzing his pants over behind the trailer. We're going to hear all those stories at the first race, and everyone's going to be in love with each other. But if he comes out and wins three of the first six races, there's going to be a lot of people grinding their teeth. A lot.
Brian, the test for Austin Proc is going to come in a couple of separate forms. The first one is, it's in Top Fuel, okay? There is no etiquette here.
Right.
There is no, hey, you hit me, I fall down, you let me get back up. But none of that, okay? You guys are going to stage how they want to stage. Everybody does it. They're selective when they do it. Some guys do it more than others. There's a couple of guys that do it just to get up in your head. That's something that he's going to have to deal with. He's never had to deal with it before.
Right.
He has seen it, but he hasn't lived it. That's going to be one of the tests right there. The other test, and we've seen a lot of drivers that have evolved from just not having a lot of experience, and they fell into the same trap. It's going to be the car control of a Nitro Funny car. Now, what Austin Proc did, he seemed to be exceptional, have an exceptional feel for the car when it would lose traction.
Yeah.
In a funny car, it's different. When you're in the heat of battle, it's a little different. It's a shorter wheelbase. The car is not as stable as a Top Fuel car. You know, so sometimes when the foot gets ahead of what the mind wants to do, you could find yourself a little more sideways. I don't really anticipate that because of the natural feel. And that natural feel comes with growing up around the sport, just having the mental state of mind of having gone down that racetrack so many times. So I do believe that Austin, and it's maybe less of his experience in other cars, but that does become a factor. The fact that, you know, he raced karts, he raced, you know, the micros, he was in the midgets. You know, all of those teach you things in terms of what you're feeling and how to react and how to respond to it. And there's no question that these cars respond a lot quicker. So you don't want to get past that point of no return. But those are the unknowns. So there are a couple of question marks with Austin Proc, and you're going to have to give him a few races. I mean, it's not going to surprise any of us to see that car come out and win the first race.
No.
But you've got to go the distance now. Yeah. It's not just first, second, and third. You're going to have some grueling races, but, you know, he's surrounded by a very good team. And I just think that those are some of the small question marks that he's going to have to answer for all of us.
You know, Daniel Wilkerson, of course, is getting his lifetime shot here to drive a Nitro Funny car full time. He did a really nice job working with Chad Green. Obviously, got that car to a top five finish, winning Pomona at the end of the season. You know, Daniel's a high energy guy, and he's only driven in like 14 total races over the course of time. And of course, he had that wild incident in Memphis where the rear tires of the car flew off, and all the other stuff that's happened. But you know, for him, this is going to be a very good car. You know, we've always talked about Tim Wilkerson having to do basically everything, and he's had good help with Richard Hartman. He's had an experienced crew. But now that he doesn't have to drive the thing as well, I think this bodes well for that Skag Mustang.
Brian, you know my theory. My theory, and this is, I keep this to myself, but this is my theory. Drivers drive according to their personality. Tuners tune according to their personality. If they're very, very calculated, if they don't say a lot, they don't reveal a lot, then that's okay. That they're probably going to be dangerous. Drivers, they're going to drive like their personality. We listen to them. We watch their interviews. We see how they move and how they walk and how they talk. And the ones that are all over the place in an interview, they're all over the place on the track, on the starting line. Not literally all over the track.
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying. And if my theory is true, then we're in for one heck of a show. But this is what it comes down to. Look, he's replacing his dad. He's younger. And I think it should show.
Yeah.
That's the question. Is he going to be quicker? You know, that was one of the things that I think, reared its head with Tim.
Yep.
And I'm sure there's a lot of reasons that he made that decision. But, you know, at some point, and you know, I have a son that just turned 18 this past weekend. At some point, the parent has to say, look, this is what I'm going to push. This is the future right here.
Yeah.
This is where marketing is going to be. This is, you know, this is youth. And sometimes, you know, you just get out of bed and you have to start to question what is the better decision for the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not saying that those were some of the things that went into him having to make this tough decision, because he loves racing.
Oh, he does.
He's a competitive guy.
Yeah.
Said, when you've done it for so long, it's like I told Forrest, I said, John, everybody keeps asking me, when's he going to retire? When's he going to hang it up? Who cares? I mean, what else is this guy going to do?
Right.
He does a good job.
Yeah.
And just let the guy race. Let him one day tell us instead of us telling him. And I just think the expectations, maybe five or six races in, I think that's when a driver really starts to get into a groove. But I think that's a question mark. Is there going to be any improvement in terms of the consistency of that car? Because one of the other things that Tim, one of the challenges that he had to deal with was, you know, guys tuning the car. He's getting in the car. He's consulting. He's telling his son what to do and what parameters to work within. With Chad's car, now you've got a talented tuner that is going to be making the decisions on that car. So you would think that the performance of that car should improve.
Absolutely, the math all points that direction. We'll see if they can execute there. Dave Richards, another story of the year, the Versatran Mustang. Obviously Dallas, that horrendous crash with Dale Creasy and he get into it together. He was in his lane, Creasy came over, couldn't avoid him. It looked like it was probably going to be curtains for the Richards operation at that point. And then we find out that they have become part of the Skag factory team. Randy at Skag has purchased them new parts, more parts and pieces than he's ever had. I talked to Dave on the show last week, and you've probably been there before, Tony, but he is in the happy but overwhelmed stage right now. Like, this is one of those things where you wish for something your whole life and you get it and you look around and you go, oh, wow.
Well, look, great for him. He and his brother, they seem like hard workers.
Yeah.
You know, and hey, you really got to go through the tough times to appreciate the opportunity that they have. And I think that's where he's at. It's like, you know, it's like, is this really happening? Is this really unfolding the way that it is? But don't forget, you can appreciate it so much more, but this is a family. This is a team that was darn near at their lowest low. You know, fortunately, nobody was physically hurt.
Yep.
And that's the worst. But when you're staring at a car that's wrecked and you know that you really don't have the fun, that's a tough time. And those tough times are what makes people better. So I think for that team, I think it's just a matter of getting the right personnel in there. I've heard that they've hired some talent that I'll let them announce, but I think that the car mechanically, when it's assembled, or whether it's this individual, if it is accurate, that's going to supervise, that's going to play a role in assembling that car, then that's a big first step for that team, because you cannot. And I think that some of the decision making in terms of tuning the car, they're probably in the ballpark. But
yes,
you can't tune a car when it's not assembled properly. So
yeah,
I think that's the first order of business. But I think they know that. It seems like there's a lot of knowledgeable people that are consulting with those guys. I think, you know, if they're asking the right questions to the right people, there's a lot of racers that'll help.
Well,
you know, there's some that might lead you down a different road, but that's just the nature of racing. But they'll get them close enough to make that car competitive. And how good would that be to see that car dip into the 390s for the first time?
Yeah, be a feel good hit of the spring if they're able to pull it off. One last driver before we transition on to some crew chief stuff and funny car, but Buddy Hull coming into the Jim Dunn car. I think this is interesting on a couple levels. One, went out to Bakersfield, got his license, got all that handled, so he is good to go for Gainesville. I think Buddy brings a lot of personality to the class, certainly a guy who's motivated, got a big heart, and that car will wear the Vertex roofing colors, which is his business, several times over the course of the year. So I think Buddy, beyond the normal stuff, does bring a little bit more funding to that car, and obviously a little more money is never a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think that's really going to be the thing to watch is, can that car, you know, and it just seems like Jim sets that car up according to what he knows.
Yeah.
He stays within his range. Yeah. And, you know, you go back in the history of Jim Dunn, anytime that he's had new parts, he'll let you know.
Yeah.
He'll let you know by dropping a nice little message. It's like a miniature grenade on you every now and again. But I think that's going to be the interesting dynamic. And of course, you mentioned Buddy. You know, I've spent a little bit of time with him. I think Buddy is going to be a great personality. I think he's going to be the most charismatic driver, not just in that car, but I think he's going to be one of the most charismatic, calculated drivers. He's entertaining. He's got a great personality, and it's genuine. It's not artificial. Yep. That's just the way I didn't know him 10, 15 years ago, but if I did, I'm guessing it's the same guy.
Yep.
He's got a great opportunity. He has a lot of seat time in short wheelbase cars, and you know, it's just a matter of getting him seasoned. But that car, I there's no question that car can consistently run in the low 40s. If they have some help monetarily, and that car can run in the 395 to depending on the conditions to four flat. We can see that car get to the second round, maybe a couple of semifinal finishes here and there.
Yeah, I mean, look, in the end of Campbell's last season in that car, it was running 92 to 95 last couple of races. It was like they locked themselves into that zone, and they haven't spent a lot of time back there. But to your point, they don't over-tune the car. They don't tune over the driver's head. I'm not saying anything bad about Alex Laughlin, but I think they give the driver a race car that they are comfortable with that driver handling. And so, yeah, it can run the mid to low 90s. It's been there, and it should be able to get back there again. On the crew chief front, we got three teams I want to talk about here. Chad Green, obviously, with the Daniel Wilkerson driving announcement, he now has Joe Serena and Dean Marinus as his crew chiefs. Paul Lee announced that he now has Johnny Lindbergh working with John Medlin. And, of course, your brother Cruz Pedregon has Johnny West working with Jason Bunker. Which of these three tandems is going to be most successful this year?
Well, the one to watch out for is Paul Lee. And we already know that.
Yeah.
I mean, John Medlin, the continuity, the chemistry is there. You know, if they've done some shuffling, it's already shown to be good. You know, so he's going to, you know, I'm not saying that he's no disrespect to Johnny Lindbergh, but I think Johnny knows this as well as anyone. Learn. All you can do is learn and pick up everything that you would like to achieve. The guy's right there. It's like having the best boxing coach, in your corner. And I think that's the scenario. That's the situation that Johnny Lindbergh is in. But that car right there, it's going to drop big numbers out there when the good cars are running, when the conditions are right, and they can run 84, 85, 86. It's no surprise to see Paul Lee spit out of 386.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to continue to do that. You know, I was thinking about Funny Car, and, you know, we already mentioned that the top three, there's no question it's going to be Tasca, it's going to be Hagen, it's going to be Austin Prock. And, well, who's going to fill out the top five? It should be someone like either Force or even J.R. Todd or Cruz. It really should be. But, you know, they have Johnny West. They have some experience. Again, there's a younger guy with a great opportunity. What is he going to do, you know, with what he has been handed? And that's going to be the key. Some of these younger guys, they got to keep the emotion out of setting the car up, out of tuning the car. I can tell you that if any of them are listening, if they're interested, they probably know that. But I'll remind you, take the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about who you're racing. Race the car, and you'll be fine. And if they can't do that, you're going to see a lot of white smoke from the car. It's this mysterious white stuff that comes off the tires. Because when your ego gets in the way, and when you get emotional about racing anyone, then you're going to have problems. And, hey, you're being watched. It's a great opportunity for some of these younger guys. But I think that we're going to see that. We'll see what their personality and what kind of discipline they have and how much of that time goes into them spending at the shop, in the pits. Are they going to get there early? Are they going to stay there late? because all of these things rear their head. They say that about boxers, that that it doesn't show when they're under the lights in the ring. Everything that they do in that ring is what they did when nobody was watching, when they're in the gym, when the cameras are off, when the lights are off, when they're training. And I think racing's a lot like that. You know, a lot of this stuff, and we hear NASCAR, they made it pretty popular, the guys back at the shop, because they know what goes on. Right. We share it a little too much. I think we know it by now, but it is an important thing that these teams do when they are preparing for a race. And once they get to the racetrack, how thorough they are they watching the new crew member that is doing the bottom end that has never done that? Are they watching him? You can only watch so much, but they have a couple of guys, and Johnny West with a lot of experience, that can oversee that. Guys like Medlin do. And that's one of the things that I've wondered if, you know, in Caps. Caps is one guy that we're going to talk about. He's going to win some races, but we did see that car lose some stock last year. It just, the performance fell off. And you know, we talk so much about Paul Lee. It's like that CEO went to that company. Why is their stock going up?
Right.
And the company's like, is that a coincidence or is it just me? And I don't know yet. Maybe we'll find out this year with Caps.
And the last guy I want to talk about in funny car before we move to pro stock, of course, is Bob Tasky. You brought him up. 341 mile an hour speed in February. I think there's not a single fan in the NHRA universe that isn't looking at a forecast for Gainesville that's going to be overcast every day of the race, with a high of high 70s, low 80s, and then Sunday maybe a high in the low 70s, and isn't thinking, all right, show me that again. Let's run that one back, as they say in Grudge Racing. Let's run that one back. I'm not doubting that he did it. I'm not. I think a lot of people did. I'm not. I would like to see that car come out and kind of maybe shut everybody up and run. Even if it's a high 330, that lets me know.
Well, you and I were just keeping up on sometimes the stream or just sometimes the feedback from the runs that they were making. And, you know, and of course I talked to some of the crew chiefs, and, you know, the track seemed like it was bumpy. It seemed like, you know, you ran the 339 in the left lane. And of course there was a little discrepancy with Antron that had run it. And, you know, there was correction made that it may not have been 339. Tasky's was, it seemed to be, it appeared to be, there's still a question mark. And I think that everyone was thinking the same thing that you and I were thinking. If they can do it again or get close, then it was probably the real deal. And lo and behold, 24 hours later, they did it again, similar conditions, in a different lane, based on the computer data, it's the real deal. No altered headers, nothing different, no modifying of the rev limiter. They did have, to some degree, wasn't NHRA tech, but I think all those questions are going to be answered at Gainesville. You know, we're all going to be looking at the same session on Friday, and, you know, of course we're going to be looking at the conditions, but 5:30, if that sun starts to go down, but, you know, again, the conditions have to be good.
Yes,
the track, the way the track is prepared is part of it, and the other part, of course, are the conditions. But then the really important part is how they set the car up. But I got to tell you, it just does seem like they set the car up differently to achieve that. And it's very calculated. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not what most people think, and they pulled it off. So, you know, if some of the other cars or teams want to give it a go, they want to try it, they have to change some things with the car. I don't know if some of the crew chiefs want to do that in those good conditions. You know, why should they? If Proc is going to set his car up to run a 382 or 383 given the conditions, I don't know if he's, it's like the ET might be more important. But make no mistake about it. Somebody wants to put 340 or 341 in Tasky's case on the board.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody right now wants to do it at a national event more than that team.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right about right about that on all counts. Move to Pro Stock. There are 23 cars on the qualifying list for Pro Stock, including at least three rookies. Kelly Murphy, who's a crew guy with Elite, he's going to make his rookie attempt. Sienna Wildgust, whose dad is a pro mod racer, going to make her rookie attempt as a driver for KB. Brandon Foster, also driving a KB car, he's going to make his rookie first attempt. I mean, it is pretty ridiculous. And when you look at this qualifying list, there's going to be at least, I'm going to say at least three top 10 cars from 2023 that don't make the cut. At least. At least.
When you look at pro stock, you only wish that the other professional classes had this kind of volume of cars and of talent. You know, of course, a lot of these elite cars, it's going to be an interesting thing to watch because, well, you know that the cars don't vary much. You know, they may within a couple, two, three hundredths of a second.
Yeah.
You know, with talent in the seat. So it really, I think it will allow some of these younger drivers or some of these newer drivers to really showcase their ability because you know they're getting into a good car. You know that the car's set up to run quick. Can they make it go as quick or close to, you know, to Erica, to Coughlin, or the Coughlins now and Stanfield? So, you know, I think it's an interesting dynamic. And, you know, we've seen other drivers like Eric Latino is not in one of these cars all the time. And the car's starting to run better. And he's starting, the more time he has in the car, he seems to get a little bit better on the starting line. And that's what it takes. But, you know, I'm sure most of these guys have tested. They come with experience. And I think that's going to be a good thing to watch, especially when it comes down to Saturday, Q3, and some of the good cars. I have a feeling that some of the good drivers are not going to be in the show going into that last session. And that's just the drama that comes with pro stock. And I think it's great.
Is this going to be number 7 for Erica? Is this another championship season for Erica? And if it isn't, why isn't it?
Well, yes, I think to answer your question, I really wouldn't bet against her.
No.
The reasons are there. You need only go back the last couple of years. They come out early, they dominate. They're going to be there at the end. They come out early. They can't. You don't even know they're there for the first 6 or 7 or 8 races.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a lot of things. Look, we can say what we want about what we see at the end of the year, what it appears to have been at the end of the year. But, you know, there's one common thread. That team is good. They've been together for a long time. She outdrives most of the drivers most of the time. The car will, you know, I mean, if it doesn't, they don't really seem to have the best car.
No.
They might, but not all the time. I mean, Greg's car has run better. Hartford's car's run better, and they still win. So why would anyone bet against them? And this should be motivation. This should be incentive to all of those other teams that, you know, that are working, that have been working, been testing as we speak, because there's some talent out there. But even the talent, Brian, even the talent that we see, that we say, they still can't compare to what she's doing. So there it is, guys, again.
Yeah. No, to me, this is, again, we go back to the fuel conversation. This is where that the formula gets flipped over. Because you look at these 23 cars on this sheet, and yeah, I'm going to say there's 3 or 4 of them that probably don't have the horsepower to qualify. We can say that right now with some confidence. But that means we got 19 that can. And so that's where it comes down to that the driver. And, you know, as much as people want to get up and talk garbage about pro stock because, well, they're all Camaros. Well, they're all this, they're all that. I get it. But if you're a true fan of the sport and your fandom is down to human ability, pro stock car and motorcycle are where it's at if that's your main concentration. If your main concentration is the mix of the human ability and the machine, fuel classes are where you're at. But in a pro stock car, the one thing she has done beyond anybody else is shown up every week and not made a single dumb mistake. And that's where it's like Al Capone. They caught him on tax evasion. They never didn't catch Al Capone for killing anybody. He killed a gazillion people. They put him in jail because he cooked the books. And it's like, I feel like that's the Erica thing. Like you're not, there's another way to beat her there somewhere. And it's not the way you've been trying.
I'm glad you didn't say it was like OJ. He didn't. he got put in jail for something else. It's like, really?
Yeah.
But look, he's in jail at least. You know, we saw a Super Bowl that you anyone knew if you're playing the Chiefs.
Yeah.
What's the most important thing? Don't make mistakes. What do they go out there and do?
Yeah.
They make mistakes. So, and I just think it's relative to a lot of these drivers, even the younger ones, some of the talent. It's like, guys, this is the moment. Just don't make a mistake. Keep the red lights, the whole shot losses. It's hard to do.
It is.
I know. I'm not saying it's an easy thing to do, but Those are the things. If you cannot outperform them, you've got to do something different. That means get up earlier. You got to outdrive. You got to do all of these things. You've got to walk and talk better than she does.
Yeah.
That's where it starts. So it's you know, it's really got to be one of those things that that she's really raised the bar for all of the drivers. And, you know, it's there. Here's the big reset. Again, and it starts, you know, it starts in Gainesville. It doesn't start, you know, everybody's going to say, oh, we got a little bit of time at the countdown. All right. You want to wait that long? Go ahead. But it's going to start in a few days from now.
So final category is Pro Stock Motorcycle. You know, the biggest story to me, of course, is Richard Gadsden coming in. Eddie Krawick gets out of or off his motorcycle. Richard Gadsden comes in. For those of you listening, if you don't know who Richard Gadsden is, you might have heard of his uncle, Ricky Gadsden, who is a guy who has won in pro stock motorcycle drag race, or rather in motorcycle drag racing on virtually every level. He did compete in NHRA sporadically over the years, but he won tons of AMA and Pro Star championships and XDA championships and all this other stuff. And Richard Gadsden is his nephew. Richard Gadsden's dad died when Richard was about 7 years old. And so Ricky was very much Richard's father for a lot of his life. And this kid grew up at the drag strip and was as obsessed as anybody could possibly be with this sport, Tony. And, you know, this is this guy's golden opportunity. And I am very excited to see how he takes advantage of it.
You know, Brian, I don't know the stats on it. I'm sure when Pete Richards hears this, he's probably going to dig them out. But, you know, if you really think, to me, where it really starts is the second generation, the third generation drivers, the players, the box. I don't care what you're doing, but when you've been immersed, indoctrinated in that sport, you tend to be better sooner. And I think for me, it's like we saw this guy named Gage do it, and he did it pretty good, right? And I think what I'm going to be watching for is how long will it take, and how close can we see Gadsden get to what Gage Herrera did last year? You know, it's the same, and when I see those Vance and Hines bikes come to the starting line, and granted, Krawick's bike got better towards the end of the season. I think when they changed some things around, they got the bikes closer. But, you know, I've talked to Andrew, I've talked to Eddie. You know, riding styles make a difference.
Yeah.
The weight of a rider makes a difference. You know, and it's as you get older, it's tougher to keep some of the pounds off. So, you know, I'm sure that they're very conscious of that. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how he can perform, how close he can get to Gage. And, you know, I think to me, that's going to be the dynamic right there, is how soon or how long will it take for him to get up to speed and to start taking some of them number one spots away from Gage.
And look, their similarities, personality type is about the same. They are quiet spoken. They are tacticians on their motorcycles. They know how they operate. They know how to build one in their sleep. And, you know, they both have that kind of mentality going for them. And I think that's really, to me, a next level part of the story as well. Now, you have Matt Smith that we need to put back in this equation. He's back on the V-twin bike. He's coming back as Angry Matt this year. He's fired up. His dad, Ricky Smith, went on this rant recently on the internet with a guy. I don't know if you saw this, Tony, but man, he went up one side of Vance and Hines and down the other and told them they should be ashamed to even hoist a trophy over their head and declare victory. And, you know, how there's a bunch of shady stuff going on and how he doesn't agree with it. So, you know, the Smith family is coming in rare form. And look, we need Matt back. You know, we need Matt back because he is high entertainment out there.
Meanwhile, they're hoisting the trophy and popping the chef, right?
Right.
Look, hey, I think it could be, I mean, it's really been one of the most entertaining rivalries in pro stock bike. Yeah. And we've seen a lot of them. But I think the worst Smith is the angry Smith. And I think the fact that he's getting on his bike that he knows so well, you know, it's just surprising that, you know, when you're talking that kind of horsepower, and it just seemed that the challenge for Matt was just not getting the bike to respond early in the run. And, you know, and given a year, whatever it was he was missing, it's going to be nice to see him get back on the machine that was such a big threat. And we talked about this. We put the numbers up. It wasn't, and I know everybody in pro stock bike were complaining about Vance and Hines, But when you and I, we picked up on this pattern. It's like we would look at low ET a year ago, and we see what low ET is, you know, currently, recently. And it's like, wow, it wasn't so much that they picked up. It was that everyone else fell off. And I even asked him, I said, what? Well, Steve Jones, what happened to you guys? I couldn't get a straight answer. So I got to tell you guys, these Vance and Hines guys, I've said it before, I'll say it again. These guys around the clock, and I'm not saying that everybody is, because they have the other tangible that is pretty important. They have the resources, they have the depth, they have the funding. That's the toughest part. But, you know, some of the other ones do, but they're missing that. And to compete with these guys, you have to do a lot. It's going to be great to see Ellie Tonglet get back on the bike, of course, thanks to his longtime friend, my friend Kenny Koretsky.
And that's a Vance and Hines bike. So that immediately should tell us championship caliber as well. And that guy's a former champ.
Yes, yeah, because really are no questions about Ellie. I mean, he's taller. Again, he brings a different riding style, but he's going to get on a machine that is prepared just like the bike that Gage Herrera sits on.
Yep.
And, you know, I think it's going to be such – I think last year we were just waiting, okay, who's going to surface? When's Matt Smith going to surface? And in terms of performance, and it just, you know, it just didn't happen. It just didn't materialize, but I think that's going to be a different story this year. But, again, they're all going to be chasing the same guys that do it so well. And they not only do they have the machine, the performance, the consistency. And I think for Gage, I think that he passed the test a few times last year. But it's going to be interesting to see if anyone gets close. I don't really think that we have seen the other aspect of the talent that Gage Herrera has. Nobody pushed him. Nobody pressed him. Fish in the barrel. But I think he's a true fisherman, and I think he could gun him down off the starting line, too.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about Matt Smith is one of the things that should put a little bit of fright, I think, into other people in the category is that we haven't heard a lot from him. And Matt Smith is definitely the guy who, when he's got something good going on, is going to clam up to his own benefit, right? It's one thing if you hear a guy chirping and saying, oh, I went testing, and I did this, and I did that. We haven't heard a word from Matt Smith, and that's not because he's afraid to say anything. That's probably because he's sharpening the blades right now.
Yeah, and I think the psychological part of it, what Matt Smith brings, it's, you know, it's something that all athletes do. I mean, there's some, they just take care of business. You look at the NFL, there was, you know, some older players, they didn't talk, and now there's, you know, there's this mental aspect of it, and what some of these players and even some of these fighters, the reason they do it. And some of these racers, they want to take you out of your game. They want to take you out of your element. They want to give you an additional something to put pressure on yourself to take you out of your game. And it works.
Yeah.
There's some funny car drivers that do it, and they do it well. John Forrest makes a living doing that. And I think it's great. Nobody does it better. And when people race them, sometimes they red light, sometimes they're late. It's like the most consistent drivers to this day, they still have a problem racing some of these guys. But anyway, that's the different dynamic of Matt Smith, and I think it's great. And I think that's why Matt Smith is so good to watch at the races, on the show, because he's genuine, he's authentic, he's a little like his dad, and he does it well.
All right, Tony, thank you for taking this romp through our professional categories today. And, I mean, we could go on forever with this, really. We've got 26 pro mods are going to try to qualify. And like I told a guy the other night, having 26 pro mods – at Gainesville is like having stock cars four wide on the final lap at Daytona. Like, something's going to happen. Something good, bad, or otherwise, something's going to happen. That's going to be a heck of a part of this show, too. But, man, I'm excited, man. I'll see you in a couple of days. We'll watch some testing and get ready to throw down this weekend.
Looking forward to it, Brian. See you on Thursday.
He is Tony Pedregon, and I will be right back with my final thoughts on this episode of The Insider. All right, we are back to close out this episode of the NHRA Insider. I hope you liked that tour through our classes. A lot of great provocative conversation there. And a lot of stuff we're going to be able to look back at, not only after this weekend, but we're going to be able to look back on some of that stuff in 3 months and 4 months and see whether our opinions line up with what actually happened. Can people find something within themselves to improve themselves beyond what we've seen in the past to match the competition that continues to evolve? Will these new crew chief changes work? Will we see performances the likes of which have been seen already this winter repeated in Gainesville? Who wins, who loses? The new leadership on some of these teams, how does that go over? All these questions and more remain to be answered. It will be awesome. The Gator Nationals this weekend at Gainesville Raceway. Go to NHRA.com to get your tickets today. You can watch us on Fox all weekend long. A unique scenario coming and that our broadcast on Sunday, the first two rounds will be shown live on Sunday morning, and then you'll come back to see us on Sunday night for the conclusion of the race. So you're going to watch the first couple of rounds live on Sunday morning, and then another race broadcast on Sunday evening. Fun. We had a nice live window open up for us that was offered to us, so we took it. It is going to be awesome. Also, make sure you tune in and watch the NHRA Insider live from the pits. Guests like Daniel Wilkerson, guests like Austin Brock, Dave Richards, and more will join us in the pits live at 11:30 a.m. You can tune in on NHRA's YouTube or, of course, on the streaming channels, the AVOD channels, if you will, whether that's Roku, Tubi, Plex, you name it. If you go and watch 24-hour NHRA coverage, it's going to be live on those channels. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm excited for the 24 Mission Foods NHRA Drag Racing Series season. I hope you are, too. I'm going to rest this voice because I need it for this weekend. Going to be plenty of screaming and yelling to do. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week to recap Gainesville and get ourselves ready for a trip west on the NHRA Insider.